when the board starts engaging in all this discussion.
Mr. Ed Moore?
That's all of our time being here. Okay, but the clock goes back to what? 41:27. Okay. 41. Okay, I just need to get something straightened out. Are we going to lose Darren Polhemus?
I checked with the secretary, and she said he's usually there until 5, and I left a message that we thought we would get to him by 5. I said between 3:30 and 5.
So. Okay.
So and we just have his cell phone number, and it hasn't buzzed.
Okay. All right. Go ahead, Mr. Briggs.
Mr. Moore, could you state your name for the record, please?
My name is Ed Moore. I'm the project manager for Monterey Mechanical. We're the general contractor at the Tri-W site for the wastewater treatment plant.
And Monterey Mechanical is the contractor to actually build the treatment facility as opposed to the collection and disposal systems?
That's correct.
How long have you worked in the construction industry?
25 years.
On October 3rd of this year, did the CSD direct Monterey Mechanical to stop work on the project?
Yes, they did. We received a phone call from Mr. Buell at approximately 6 o'clock in the morning asking us not to go to work that day. And subsequently, we got a letter with more specifics on what we were supposed to do.
And then did anything happen between October 3rd and October 20th?
On October the 12th, I received a cell phone call from Mr. Dan Blesky, the interim general manager, indicating that our contract was going to be terminated, and that he was calling me as a courtesy to let me know, and that he didn't want me to read that in the newspaper the following day. I contacted the president of our company, Milt Burleson, to let him know that, and I also contacted Dylan Wade, the resident engineer for Montgomery Watson, who confirmed that that was the case, and they'd been asked by Mr. Blesky to write that termination letter to Monterey Mechanical.
And you said Mr. Blesky is the interim general manager. He's the interim general manager for the district?
For the CSD, yes.
What was Montgomery Watson Harz's role in the project, or what is their role?
They were both the design engineer, and our dealings with them were as the construction manager.
On October 21st, did the district notify Monterey Mechanical to resume work?
We received two letters on the 21st. One indicated that we were supposed to return to work. There was a second letter, though, that also conditioned that return to work that said that we had to have a pre-construction conference and that we also, it was conditioned on the resumption of funding by the state.
And at that time, did the district tell you anything about whether the loan would be funded?
No, they did not.
When was your next meeting with Mr. Blesky?
We actually met the following day on the 23rd. It was a meeting that they had termed the pre-construction conference. At that time, we indicated that if funding was resumed, that we'd be able to go right back to work. And Mr. Blesky indicated that that wasn't the case, that there were special conditions related to the Tri-W site. There weren't any further discussions at that time. There was a meeting set up on that date where we ended up having a dinner meeting on the 28th with Mr. Blesky.
And what did Mr. Blesky request Monterey Mechanical to do at that meeting?
At the dinner meeting, Mr. Blesky indicated that the negotiations with the state had gone well and that it appeared that there'd be a two-year suspension of the project. He was wanting to know if we were interested in what he termed standing down for that 2 years, where the district would release our bond and allow us to basically demobilize. We wouldn't be terminated, but we'd be in it was called stand down, but kind of a suspension mode.
Did Mr. Blesky offer to terminate the construction contract at that time?
No, we asked why that wasn't going to be done, and he indicated that he couldn't do that because the state wouldn't allow it.
And what was Monterey Mechanical's response to the stand-down proposal?
We indicated that we had come to Los Osos to build the project and that we really weren't interested in anything else other than that.
Did you have any further contact with him before November 8th?
I believe there was one informal meeting with myself and the representatives from Bernard and Whitaker in his office.
And what happened at that meeting?
He just indicated that he solicited help from us to contact the state to reinstate the loan, and he had indicated at that time that he knew that that my call to the president of the company was then forwarded on and passed on to the state, so they were aware that we had been called and told that we were going to be terminated.
And what date was that?
The date for which?
That you got that call.
I got that call on October the 12th.
So that was before the October 28th dinner meeting?
Yes.
Okay. And then on November 8th, Monterey Mechanical received a resume work letter from the district?
Yes, we did. It was also conditioned, though. It said that we have to have another meeting with Montgomery Watson and the district to discuss restarting the work and what the scope of our work would be at that time.
And you had that meeting on November 8th?
We had the meeting on November the 8th. At that time, Mr. Blesky indicated that we would have to have a subsequent meeting the following day to go over what our revised scope would be at the Tri-W site.
On November 8th, did Mr. Blesky say anything about whether the district intended to construct the project at Tri-W?
Yes, he did. I had asked during the meeting if the district intended to build at the Tri-W site, even if Measure B was repealed or found to be illegal, and he indicated that they would not build at Tri-W, even in the absence of Measure B.
Did Mr. Blesky say anything about other funding options available to the district if they lost the state board loan?
He indicated that there were no other options, that they had looked into others, but at that time there were no other options.
And then did you meet again on November 9th?
Yes, we did meet with, again, Montgomery Watson. At the meeting on the 8th, Whitaker and Bernard were also in attendance. On the 9th, it was just ourselves, Montgomery Watson, and the district. At that time, Mr. Blesky went through some different scenarios as far as what the rescoping of our project would be and indicated that everybody wasn't at that meeting to make that determination, that the state would have to be involved in that. We asked again then, because at that time the district had voted on the resolution and the proposal to the state, and I had asked Mr. Blesky, it didn't seem that that those proposals lined up with the statements that he was making in the meeting, because he was indicating that the site would not be built at Tri-W or the treatment plant would not be built at Tri-W. I asked if even if the Prop 218 vote was taken, did they still not intend to build at Tri-W? And he said that that was the case, that the board would not build at Tri-W even if the Prop 218 vote was successful.
And even if Measure B was invalidated?
That's correct.
Have you received any communications from the district since November 9th?
Excuse me, Ms. Okun, if I could. How many times did he make that statement to you?
At that meeting?
I mean, through your discussions with Mr. Blesky.
At each one of my meetings with Mr. Blesky.
Well, I mean, where he indicated that we're not going to build a Tri-W, regardless of Measure B, regardless of a 218 vote.
The comment about the 218 vote only happened on the November 9th meeting, but at each one of our meetings I had been asked to ask Mr. Blesky or the district that question, if they intended to build a Tri-W, since that was great concern of ours, and at each meeting that we had, the answer was always the same, that they would not build at the Tri-W site.
And, okay. Mr. Chair, if I
yes.
might ask, just to clarify, do you have the dates? Can you give the dates of each one of those meetings off the top of your head?
It was November the 9th, November the 8th. It was at our dinner meeting on the 28th.
October 20?
Yes. And there was another meeting before that, but I don't recall the date.
Before October 28th?
Yes.
Okay, thank you.
Do you have notes that you could look at that have the dates in them?
I don't have all my notes with me, no. But I do have notes that I could refer to.
With you?
Not with me.
Okay.
No, sorry.
What work has Monterey Mechanical done at the site since October 3rd?
We followed the district's direction in the October 3rd letter where we were supposed to maintain security at the site. We've also installed the SWIPI measures that we were required to do. And the Coastal Commission permit required that we do dust control on the site, so we water the site twice a day. But other than that, there's been no work go on since then.
And the SWIPI measures are the stormwater pollution prevention plan requirements under the construction permit?
That's correct.
Why hasn't Monterey Mechanical regraded the site, the Tri-W site?
We've never been given direction on what to do by the district. We've sent, I believe it's 3 letters to the district asking for a clear direction on how we're supposed to proceed, and we've never been given that direction. Last meeting at the 9th, at the end of the meeting, it was agreed that that meeting would not be deemed a rescoping meeting because the district was unable to give us any direction on how we were to proceed. And we made it clear at each of those meetings that we were maintaining the standby posture that we've been asked to do on October the 3rd.
Thank you. I have no other questions.
Any questions by the board?
Yes, Mr. Chair.
Mr. Jeffries.
You mentioned that you had a meeting and they wanted to change the scope of your work. And how did that affect your contract you had with them? Did you have your contract with the CSD directly or through Montgomery?
No, our contract's with the CSD.
Okay. Then my question would be, how did it affect your, with the change, did they give you a change list of the scope of work they wanted you to do?
We had requested that, a formal notification on what the changes would be, and we never received that.
Is your company contracted for the whole project or just a portion of?
We are only doing the wastewater treatment plant at the Tri-W site. We're not doing the collection systems.
Okay. So you're just construction management for Tri-W only?
We're the general contractor, so we'd actually be building the facility.
Oh, okay. So you do both. Okay. Thank you.
I think I saw some letters where they attached to the prosecution team's reply or rebuttal that came in.
From Montgomery Watson Honda?
Yes.
Yes.
Yeah, that's his company?
No, his company is
okay.
Monterey Mechanical.
Right.
Montgomery Watson is the construction supervisor. They design the
okay.
specs.
In your discussions with Mr. Valesky or anyone else connected to the CSD, do they indicate that they were going to dismiss their complaint in the Superior Court and work to get the appeal dismissed?
There was never any indication one way or the other to that.
Okay. Thank you. Ms. Hogan? Let's see, we'll have cross-examination. Okay. Let's drop.
Thank
yeah,
you.
30, hang on one sec. We'll set our clocks. Mr. Seitz, hold on. 3125. Okay, now I got to reset this. Where does it go to? 3409?
Yeah.
Okay, go ahead. Go ahead, Mr. Seitz.
First of all, you talked about a number of letters exchanged, letters from the district to you and letters from your company to the district. Did you bring those with you?
I did not bring the letters with me, no.
And
to clarify, there's one letter from the district to us on, well, there's a letter on October 3rd. There was a subsequent letter that was sent to Milt Burleson. But our letters always were returned to Montgomery Watson because that's the way the contract was set up. So our letters were sent to Montgomery Watson and then passed on to the district.
Okay, so those letters weren't directly to the district. It required Montgomery Watson as an intermediary to make sure those letters got to the district.
That's correct. That's how the contract required correspondence to go.
So did you keep, Have you given copies of those letters to the prosecution team?
Yes, we have.
Just to clarify, we received copies of three letters in the last, this week. And I have those with me if the board wants to see them. The letters from the district to the construction contractors, Monterey Mechanical as well as the other two construction contractors, are in the record.
But I guess I'm willing to accept that as long as the statement is that all letters are in the record and there aren't records that are, and I'm not saying this mean spirit or anything, I just want to have assurances that all of the letters that have been exchanged by Monterey Mechanical and the district are in the record.
We don't have all the letters. I have three letters, and I'd be happy to have copies made at the break.
I okay, actually, I'll take Mr. Seitz, I don't care to read any more letters myself. But if you want to use them, get them introduced, that's fine with me.
That's fine.
If they want to use the letters and get them introduced, you know, through this witness, that's fine, too.
Well, that's...
So, I mean, he can refer, the witness can refer to just a couple of letters.
I don't want to sound argumentative. All I want to do is make sure that the record has all the letters that he is testifying to in the record. That's my only reason to ask this question.
Okay. All right.
Secondly, to your knowledge, did your company ever contact the State Water Resources Control Board?
I have no knowledge of that, no.
Okay. And by the way, at this hearing, hearsay is allowed. So if you've heard from your company that they contacted the state, under the rules here, it would be admissible.
Yeah, it would be.
I'm not aware of any personnel in our company contacting the state directly, no.
And you didn't overhear any conversations?
Not a direct conversation with the state, no.
Okay, let me see if I can clarify that. How about the State Water Resources Control Board?
Okay, Mr. Ricano, please, this is not the place for photographs. Please don't do that again.
No, not the State Water Resources Control
Yes,
Board.
You.
And lastly, I'm sure you... you would agree that your company has an interest in constructing, a financial interest in constructing at the Tri-W site?
Yes, as I stated earlier, that's why we came here, was to build a project there.
Do you have any questions?
Mr. Moore, when you spoke to Mr. Blesky about the courtesy conversation. Is that your words, a courtesy call?
That was what Mr. Blesky deemed it, okay. Was that it was a courtesy call.
Were you aware of any board action, by that I mean the CSD board, authorizing a termination of your company's contract?
No, I was not.
Had you ever received notification in accordance with the terms of that contract under their termination provisions that your contract was being terminated?
No, I have not.
Was it your belief that Mr. Blesky could unilaterally and without any board action whatsoever summarily terminate your company's contract?
It was my understanding, based on that phone call and then the follow-up to Montgomery Watson, to confirm that they'd been asked to write a letter of termination to us, that someone must have authorized that termination.
But you're not aware of any action that you can identify on the part of the CSD board that would have authorized a termination of your company's contract. Is that a correct statement?
Yes, it is.
Okay. Are you aware of the fact that the state SRF, State Board SRF loan folks on October 13th informed the CSD that they were withholding the second disbursement on the SRF loan payment to the CSD board on account of a call that Monterey Mechanical had made to their office?
I'm aware that that loan payment was held up, but it was not based on a phone call from Monterey Mechanical.
So you would disagree with the statement that that was made by the state board to the CSD?
It wasn't. That phone call was not made by Monterey Mechanical personnel.
Do you know who made it?
It could have been made by counsel.
Your lawyer?
Yes.
Oh, thank you.
Can we just take a 1 minute break? I think Mr. McClendon wants to confer with Mr.
Sure. Okay.
Stop the clock.
Mr. Chair?
Yes.
I'd like to ask Ms. Oakham. I'd like to see those letters in question.
Yeah. And do you have copies, Mr. Seitz, of those letters?
We certainly have those records that were attached. I think we have three letters, and they're kind of dark because they were sent, looked like to me that they were sent over the fax. But what I'm not sure that we have is the letters from the district to Monterey Mechanical.
Ms. Oakham, are those part of the documents that I have already?
We put the we put the Montgomery Watson letters in the record with our staff rebuttal. I think that what Mr. Moore was talking about were three letters that Monterey Mechanical wrote to the district via Montgomery Watson, and I have those. They're not in the record, but I have them. There were also letters from the district to Monterey Mechanical at various times saying stop work or start work with conditions.
Those are the ones I want to see.
Okay, those are in the record, and I can.
Yeah, and those are part of the. They're part of the rebuttal documents, I believe.
The stop work letters, I believe, were in both our and the district's original submissions.
Okay. Well, there's some documents I have. They're so dark I can't read them properly.
Those are the Montgomery Watson Harza letters, and those were the best copies we had.
They're blue background. Okay.
Hard to read.
Mr. Seitz, Ms. McClendon, did you want to resume? Sure. Go ahead.
I'm sorry. Do you know who Barbara Evoy is?
I've seen that name on correspondence. She's with the state, I understand.
Yeah, she holds the position of chief of the Division of Financial Assistance for the State Water Resources Control Board. Is it your testimony that you've never had a conversation with Barbara Evoy?
Yes.
Are you aware of the fact that Barbara Evoy claims she had a conversation with you?
No, I'm not.
Thank you.
Any other questions, Mr. McClendon? Okay. Yes, Dr. Press.
Could we see the letters to Monterey Mechanical?
To Monterey Mechanical?
To Monterey Mechanical.
You can put those up on the screen.
Thank you.
Now, these are not in the record?
Yes, they are.
They are, okay. Can you tell us the document numbers?
Yes.
Or the exhibit numbers?
We'll be able to zoom in.
Actually, the first one is not scanned. Do you have the October 3rd letter? We can make copies of the October 3rd letter, but we don't have it. We don't have a scanned copy of it that we can put up. What's the date of this one?
November 9th.
That's not actually what I wanted to see.
No.
No, that's a letter from Monterey Mechanical. I wanted a letter to Monterey Mechanical, either the October 3rd or the October 12th letters.
Mr. Moore, while they're looking for that, I've got a question for you. As part of your contract, do you know if you have what would be called liquidated damages?
Yes,
for each day that you have been prevented from working or ordered to stop work?
There's liquidated damages for when we don't meet the milestone dates in the contract.
Okay.
There was an interim milestone date and then a final completion date for the project.
Okay, so that goes against you if you don't complete. What about if the district puts your work on hold or standby? Do they owe you any money?
There's terms in the contract to come to that amount, but it's not a set amount.
How is it configured?
There's verbiage that allows certain things to be included in that request for compensation. And they're listed out in, I believe it's Section 15 of the contract. I don't have them memorized, though.
Okay. Has the district told you that it's going to compensate your company for those items?
No, they haven't. We have had no discussions along that line.
Okay.
You can put that up on the screen. We have a blurry copy of the October 3rd letter, and we're looking for a cleaner one that we can put on the overhead projector. We'll just put it on the screen.
You might blow that up as much as possible.
Yes, please.
Go ahead.
This is an October 3rd letter from the Community Services District General Manager, Bruce Buell, although it was signed by, I believe, Karen Vega for Bruce Buell, excuse me, to Milt Burleson of Monterey Mechanical in Oakland. Subject line, suspension of work pursuant to specification 15.1. Dear Milt, the LOCSD board on October 1st, 2005 ordered immediate suspension of all work pursuant to specification 15.1 of our contract for up to 90 days. This letter is LOCSD's formal notice to suspend work subject to the following qualifications. First, contractor shall winterize all work pursuant to the stormwater pollution prevention plan and to specifications in the contract documents. Two, contractor shall maintain dust control as specified in contract documents. Contractor shall comply with all county permit compliance requirements. Contractor shall provide for security protection of materials and equipment in staging areas. Lastly, contractor shall maintain a standby posture until further notice. LOCSD will provide further guidance under separate cover. Thank you for your cooperation in this matter.
Dr. Press.
Mr. Moore, could you tell me if this letter, in your view, was a stop work order?
Yes, it was.
Would you expect any other kind of letter representing the district, the CSD? Would it have to be signed by CSD board directors to be more legal, or did you take it as the official stop work?
That was the official stop work. We would take any correspondence from the general manager as being an official district correspondence.
To your knowledge, are there any requirements in your contract stating that that orders have to come from the district and not the general manager, the district board of directors, excuse me?
No, there's not. The correspondence is to come through Montgomery Watson Harza, and these letters were subsequently passed on to us by Montgomery Watson.
But from the general manager?
Yes.
I see. Thank you.
Any other questions? Dr. Press? Mr. Hayashi?
Mr. Moore, what happens at the end of 90 days? Is your contract null and void?
That's a legal question. I couldn't answer. There's no terms in that section that say what happens after that 90-day suspension.
Do you go back to work?
No.
I mean, it says that...
It doesn't say you don't go back to work.
Yeah, 15.1.
15.1 is a section in the contract that talks about suspension and termination. Originally, there was wording in that section that said after the 90 days, we could terminate the contract. But that was deleted by addendum. So I honestly don't know after that 90 days what would happen. It's kind of open.
I just have a question for Mr. Seitz or Mr. McClendon, and I think I didn't appreciate it until the last few moments here. Is it the district's position that a letter such as this was not authorized by the district itself? I mean, you'll have to help me with that.
There have been, and it's a good question. I appreciate it, Mr. Chairman. As mentioned earlier, the district acts three ways: through motions, resolutions, and ordinances. And it's restricted statutorily to that. There have so far been, there's been one motion that was on October 3rd, allowing for the temporary suspension. That was 2 days after, or three days after the new board was sworn in, for a brief timeout. That was done by motion. Since that time, as you know, there have been two resolutions that have been approved with regard to the state board SRF loan, and I think those are before you as well. Other than that, there has not been any other motion for termination or anything of that sort. Can I ask Mr. Blesky to
the way construction contracts normally operate?
Mr. Blesky, I'm really just trying to cut to the heart of this document. Is it the district's position that this was unauthorized?
No.
Okay.
Because the general manager is the owner's representative, and that was by motion when the contract was awarded and funding was authorized. And obligated. Those are key. The other thing is that section 15.1 is entitled suspension of work, which is a contractual remedy allowed by the contract, approved by the state, reviewed by the regional board staff, that allows for suspensions when you come to situations which are common whenever you break the earth that need a timeout. We had a situation where we had Measure B. We're abiding by Measure B. We needed time to assess the hydraulic implications on the system as we evaluated which portions of the collection system that we could construct and use in any circumstance. Okay. And that's what that clause provides.
Okay, and I understand that. I'm just trying to get to the point as to what your position is with this document. And I just want to make sure it was authorized to be sent out as written.
Yes, sir.
Okay. That's all I wanted to clarify. Okay. Any additional questions for Mr. Moore? Okay. Ms. Hogan?
No.
And I think Mr. Seitz and Mr. McClendon, you're finished with this witness? Okay. Thank you, sir. Okay. Go ahead. Any other witnesses?
We have no other witnesses.
No other witnesses. Okay. You're down to 27:09, so an hour and 27 minutes on that was their clock.
Right.
Yeah, hour and 27. So let me just check.
Do you want to take a short break and try to get Mr. Polhemus on the line?
Okay. Do we need to ask him any questions?
We don't. But if the board has questions for him, this would be a good time where I can see if he's available tomorrow.
Okay. Does the board have any questions for Mr. Polhemus? He was involved with the state revolving loan fund, and he's available by teleconference in Sacramento.
Yeah, I think we really haven't heard a whole lot of information on that aspect, and I'm wondering if he might be available tomorrow.
Okay.
At some point.
If we could take a 5-minute break.
Take a 5-minute break.
I'd like to hear more from from both sides, or at least from the discharger.
Okay, 5-minute break. Resume our meeting. Okay. Folks, please, we're going to resume. And Mr. Seitz, what we're going to do at this point before we turn it over to you, I wanted to call Bruce Buell to the stand, ask him some questions. While this topic with these letters and what Mr. Moore just told us is fresh.
Yeah.
You'll have an opportunity to ask him questions also.
I just want to just make a quick observation, and then I just wanted to move all of the slides that the State Water Resources Control Board prosecution team has flipped up on the wall to make sure that they are included in administrative record, and the chair agrees.
Yes, they are.
Yes.
Very
yeah.
good. Thank you.
Yeah, they are. Okay, Mr. Buell. Were you aware that this letter was going out? Is that your signature on the bottom, or is that?
Could he state his name for the record?
Oh yeah, go ahead.
I'm Bruce Buell, General Manager, Los Osos Community Services District on administrative leave.
Okay, and when did you start with the Community Services District?
I was hired by the district on November 16, 1999.
And when were you put on administrative leave?
October 1, however, also on October 1, I was directed by the board to issue these three letters. You have a copy to Monterey Mechanical. I was also directed by motion to transmit letters to Bernard and Whitaker.
And who gave that instruction to you?
The board of directors. That was by motion on October 1 at their meeting that evening before they placed me on administrative leave.
Was that an open session or closed?
That was open. The open session portion of the agenda.
Okay. Mr. Jeffries, did you?
No, I think I had some concerns because one of the attorneys for the appellant is saying there's only...
You mean the district?
District, excuse me. There was only, I think, three ways of giving direction, and I know being a chair of a special district, there are other ways of giving direction to a general manager. And it doesn't have to be by motion, it doesn't have to be resolution, it doesn't have to be by ordinance. And can you give me some insight on, I think you said it was by motion and it was a vote. Was it 100% vote?
Yes, there was 100% unanimous vote of the board of directors to direct me to issue these three suspension letters.
And then I see somebody signed that for you.
Mm-hmm.
Is that because you were then placed on administrative leave?
No, sir. I had a planned vacation. I actually drafted this letter in the lobby of the St. Francis Hotel in San Francisco. I had made arrangements with Karen Vega, who's my administrative secretary, to appear at 8 a.m. that morning. I called Monterey Mechanical, Whitaker, and Bernard at 6 a.m. because they are supposed to mobilize by 7. I wanted to give them time to stand down. And at 8 a.m., I dictated three letters and directed my secretary to sign them on my behalf.
Are you under the impression with this letter that it's a permanent work stoppage?
No, sir, I am not. My belief, and I believe the board's motion, was to suspend construction activity and at least at that time. As you know, subsequently, Measure B has been deemed valid, and at this point, it would be up to the board to determine if they have the ability to reactivate the contract with Monterey Mechanical.
Okay.
Mr. Buell, we heard from Mr. Moore, and he had indicated that he had been given direction by Mr. Blesky that the contract was going to be terminated. I think he mentioned that on a number of instances. Can you tell us what you know about that? Did the board at all, or
I apologize that I can't answer that question. Since I wrote this letter, I have not been in any of the direct negotiations or in communication with any of the contractors. I have attended board meetings, but only the open session portion of those board meetings. I have not participated in any of the closed session discussions.
Okay. So basically the date of this letter kind of highlights for us when your knowledge of events going on with the district really came to a conclusion, except what the public would also know.
Indeed.
Okay. While you're here with us, I'm wondering if you can tell us something about the operating and maintenance expenses as they were projected for the Tri-W plant once it was to be completed. If you have that for an annual basis, a monthly basis.
Well, actually, I apologize, cannot do that. The Montgomery Watson Harza developed a O&M projection at $2.5 million per year for the entire system. But to my knowledge, there was not a separate breakout for the treatment plant versus the collection or the disposal works.
Okay, so but this is operation and maintenance for the entire system.
Mm-hmm, that's correct.
And that's the facility and the collection system.
Yes, sir.
Okay.
Mr. BOI, chairman, is consulting with the attorney. Was this discussion or the direction given to you, was it in an open session or a closed session?
It was open session. This was an agendized item. This was the first formal meeting of the board. They had had a pre-meeting before they were sworn in. The election was the 27th of September. The registrar of voters certified the election results on the 29th. And this meeting was a special meeting held on October 1. I believe it was a Saturday evening.
Have you attended other board meetings since that period of time?
Yes, I've attended about half of the additional board meetings on my own. Now, I did attend one meeting at the direction of the district. The other meetings I've attended as of my own interest.
The meeting that you attended on the request of the board, was that an open session or closed session you attended?
Just the open session.
The meetings that you attended and the one that you requested to be there, on the agenda, was it noticed on the closed session portion of the agenda that they were going to be discussing the contracts for the work stoppage?
I do not remember seeing that item on any closed session agenda.
Okay, thank you.
Okay. What can you share with us that you know about the board's position with respect to Measure B and what their intent was before the recall election took place? I mean, we know that they had a lawsuit that had been filed. We know it was up on appeal, but I'm interested to know what the individual directors, you know, the positions that they had with it.
Mr. Chair?
Yes.
I just want to just raise.
a little bit of an objection on ambiguity. I don't know if you're talking about, maybe Mr. Buell knows, but whether or not we're talking about the prior board before the recall election, the board that was running for the recall, or the board that was appointed after the recall. All I'm asking for is
okay.
Make sure that...
When Ms. Schicker and Ms. Tacker were the two newer members on the board, with the three recent ones that were recalled, when it was that board constitution, what were the discussions that were taking place amongst the board members with respect to maintaining the lawsuit challenge and positions that they might take depending on what happens with the recall or the passage of Measure B? Do you have any?
I do not believe the board discussed those in open session. I believe the only discussion was retention of special counsel.
Okay. And were you there in closed session?
Yes. Up until October 1, I have attended every closed session of the district since November 16, 1999.
Okay. Mr. Seitz, you had a...
I was just going to raise the objection that you were asking for closed session items, but Mr. Buell caught it, so...
Okay. All right. Any other questions from the board? Mr.
No.
Shallcross?
I just wonder, are you going to be available tomorrow?
Yes, sir.
Okay, thanks.
All right. Thank you. Mr. Thomas?
Mr. Buell, you said that you recall a $2.5 million per year operation and maintenance cost for the total facility, including for the facility and the distribution system.
Mm-hmm.
You have no feeling for how that breaks out? Is it 50-50 or 70-30?
Tomorrow I can bring the detail. What the engineer provided is an estimate of energy, labor, materials. There's a number of contingency requirements and replacement an obligation that we have under the installment sales agreement. So what that would establish is those classifications of OM&R costs into the future. Now, some of those are more heavily leveraged towards the treatment facility, and some are more heavily leveraged towards distribution and disposal. So tomorrow I could provide a guesstimate of how that would break out.
Okay. I would appreciate if you would do that, and you could bring the documents then so that we have them if we need to take a look at the district has them?
Yes. Well, most of my files have been removed from my office, and the only caveat is I would need Mr. Blesky's permission to access those files.
Have they been identified or marked, Mr. Seitz?
I believe
Ms. Schicker says she has them.
Is representing to me that they're part of her presentation to the board. So if Mr. Buell's here, I think he's going to be because he's part of my presentation.
Okay.
He's sort of a multitasker here.
Good.
That you will probably get a chance to see those.
Good. Okay. Well, we'll see you tomorrow then.
Can I just ask Mr. Buell just one question?
Of course.
I'm telling you.
Yeah, and Ms. Oaken, then you can ask him any questions.
Mr. Buell, you testified that the $2.5 million was for collection and treatment. It also included disposal, did it? Mm-hmm. Did it not?
Yes, sir.
It's all three operations.
I agree with that.
Thank you.
Okay.
One quick clarifying question. What was the name of that consultant again, Mr. Buell, that prepared that estimate for the district?
Montgomery Watson Harza.
Thank you.
Okay, Mr. McClendon.
Mr. Buell, is it fair to say that you're not completely retired on administrative leave, that you are actually taking a moderate amount of work as a special projects manager for our district?
I have agreed to provide the district with any research that is requested, and I actually end up working about 2 hours a day to satisfy those requests.
Okay, and just a last question. As a general manager, would you have ever terminated a contract without cause, without taking that to your board for direction?
No, sir.
Thank you.
I'm sorry, Mr. Chairman. I
yes.
have one more question.
Of course.
The Early in your testimony, I'm not sure if I heard you correctly, you said that with Measure B being invalidated by the courts, is that your understanding that the current posture of Measure B is that it no longer valid or that it is valid?
Well, this is hearsay because the only thing I know is what I've read in the papers. The papers have alleged that as a result of the district's action to dismiss the underlying complaint and the appellant's action to withdraw the appeal, that holds the stay intact from the appellate court. And I'm not an attorney, and this is way beyond my competence. So
what you said was you believe Measure B stands as a result of the withdrawal from the litigation.
Mm-hmm.
Okay. And do you have any, in your dealings with the district, have you had any basis to have an understanding of what they believe the status of Measure B is?
I have talked to Mr. Seitz and asked his opinion. He also believed that it was, at this point, standing. But I honestly don't know if that was in John's role as counsel to the district or as an attorney at large.
Okay, thank you, sir.
Okay, Ms. Olkin, do you have any questions?
No.
Okay. Mm-hmm. All right, thank you, Mr. Buell. All right, where do I want to set this? It's going to be Mr. Seitz and Mr. McClendon, 2709. Okay. You guys are on.
I'd just like to interrupt. Chairman Young,
yes,
and the board, I'd just like to start off with the introduction of our presentation.
Go right ahead.
Please. Thank you. My name is Lisa Schicker. I'm the president of the LOCSD board. And we have 4 to 5 presenters today in our presentation. We're going to start out with the attorneys, Mr. McClendon and Mr. Seitz, followed by Mr. Blesky, the interim general manager, followed by Rob Miller. We have a slide for the speakers.
Someone didn't hear me earlier.
Yep, go ahead. And then followed by Mr. Rob Miller. He is our district engineer.
Okay.
Followed by myself. Followed by Mr. Chuck Cicinia. And then I'm going to follow up again at the end of the presentation. I have a special request this evening. We also have a board meeting tonight following this meeting, and you mentioned 7:45, and 7 o'clock would be a little better for us because we have a long closed session meeting after that we'll be attending, and we have it televised and agendized, and people are expecting to be there too. So, pardon me? Can you also give us a reading on the time? Our presentation is about an hour long, maybe 40
okay,
to 45
well you,
minutes.
You've,
we
you've
can
got an hour and 26 minutes.
Okay, because we want some time for rebuttal as
yeah.
well.
Yeah, and okay. That's right. Yeah, that time includes rebuttal and closing.
An hour and 20.
Yeah.
Okay,
yeah. Thank you.
Okay, and then just like to state for the record and disclosure, a disclosure about any director who's speaking today. We're all speaking as individuals. We have no right to speak on behalf of the board. All opinions and views expressed are our own, not to be imputed to be that of the district. So that's just how it has to be because of the way the district operates.
Okay, so then I have a question for you, Ms. Schicker. Is anyone authorized to speak on behalf of the board?
The only way the district is authorized to speak is through motion, resolution, or ordinance as a board, and we have our district council to represent us as well.
And so you didn't authorize anyone to speak for the board?
We're all speaking, we don't, as members of the board. That's all we can do we're organized.
The board could have authorized someone to speak for them. And my question
and
is, did you do that?
Well, that would be Mr. McClendon then.
Okay.
Okay.
All right.
Okay. Mr. Chair, I also have a question for him.
Go ahead.
Since I believe you had 4 or all 5 of your board members here now.
Yes, that's true. We agendized a special meeting so we could all attend, and we're not allowed
to
take any
action. So this meeting is noticed?
Yes, it is.
Yes.
Okay.
Yes, sir.
So you could take action today because you do have...
No. We can't take action because we agendized it as a special meeting with no actions to be taken.
Okay.
That's how we did it so we could all attend.
Okay. All right. I'll resume the clock. Here we go. Go ahead.
Thank you,
Excuse
Mr. Chair.
If the directors aren't speaking on behalf of the district and only the district's lawyers are speaking on behalf of the district, It seems to me that the directors should be part of the public comment period.
Well, I think they could be called as witnesses.
Yeah.
I'm not sure who she, if she's just speaking for herself now as a witness,
well,
is that what you're doing right now?
Mr. Shellcross, we have prepared very diligently. We've practiced for this presentation. We have parts and pieces all allocated, and our time has been done. We're ready to go. We would really
respect that. That's fine. Can you answer my question?
What is your question,
Are you
sir?
Speaking for yourself right now?
Yes, I am.
Only.
We have a presentation to make to your board.
But that could be problematic because, I mean, I need to know. They spoke on behalf of the prosecution team as an entity. So are you speaking as a member of the public now?
I am the president of the board. Okay. I am a spokesperson for the board when it comes to the press. Would that be enough to allow me to speak and do the presentation today? I've practiced. I'm prepared. We're ready to go.
Well, are you speaking on behalf of the board when you give this presentation? In other words, this as a witness. Mr. Seitz, it's a little
maybe,
confusing.
Maybe I can just hopefully clarify this, although I doubt it. First of all, I think that just as these individuals up here, we've heard testimony, are testifying for the prosecution team, and I assume that there's no board action, formal board action by this board or any other board designating them to speak on behalf of the whole board as the prosecution team. And my feeling is that the speakers that are coming up here are speaking as part of the defense team.
Okay.
But they want to make it clear for the record that there has been no motion with a document that says, okay, you can read this document or you can do this or say this. I believe that for my purposes is that you can take what they are saying as officers of the district and being on the defense team. Okay. Our whole issue before, I know this may sound confusing, and I think Mr. Buell in his dialogue with Mr. McClendon pointed it out, the managers have certain inherent authority. I mean, you don't have to say, sign this letter, go to the board and say, sign this letter, make sure that it's okay with the board to sign that letter. A manager works as the administrative arm of a board. I mean, that's the way it works. The question was, is on material substantive issues, if a board forms a contract, can the general manager terminate the contract? And our position is the answer is no. Unless the contract says the manager can terminate the contract, it's what we typically call as lawyers' equal dignities rule. You terminate under the same form that you formed the document. So our position is just this, is that when individual board members speak for the board in these hearings regarding the formation of this complaint, just because Ms. Schicker says something or Mr. Fouché says something, it shouldn't be imputed to the board as board policy that was the key policy that triggered this ACL complaint, because it simply wasn't board action. There wasn't the board speaking for the board. It was individuals speaking for themselves. Now, maybe that's a distinction without a difference, but the reality is that, you know, when somebody says, you breached the contract with the contractors because Joe Bob, I don't think there's a Joe Bob in here, hopefully there's not, who happens to be a director, said that. It's just the same as you folks. You folks can't impose a penalty on your own. I assume this isn't the case, is that individual board members sitting before us can't take action on behalf of the board as individuals. You need to get to a board meeting, follow the Brown Act, take actions. And I think it's a difficult, I know that there's a fuzzy line in there, and I'm not saying it's perfectly black and white, but the district's position is that only the board can terminate these contracts.
Okay, and I understand that. I think we do understand that, but I just want to make sure that if any of the individual CSD board members are going to be speaking, that they are speaking as board members and that they are authorized to speak as board members, and whatever they tell us is going to be consistent with board policy.
Well,
and that, you know, I'm not going to hear later that, well, you know, that's not what it was. You heard something that, you know, is not what you think it is.
I think the best way to handle that as a practical matter is everybody is sworn in under penalty of perjury.
Correct.
So I don't want to speak for the chair here, but I think when they begin their testimony, are you speaking on behalf of the district or are you speaking as an individual, would be the question that the chair would want to ask them so that there'd be absolute clarity at that time.
Okay. And just so you know, our staff doesn't represent the board. If they did represent us, we probably may not have this hearing because they'd have inherent power to do to carry this out on their own. So there is a big distinction there.
I agree.
Mr. Chair, before he goes on with his presentation, I'd like to make a correction. We're not under the Brown Act. We're under the Bagley-Keene Act.
I appreciate the difference.
Okay. All right. Ms. Schicker will restart the clock, and as the CSD president, go ahead and give us your presentation.
Thank you very much, Mr. Young. I'd like to start out by just explaining briefly the organization of the presentation. We kind of have a three-pronged approach. Some of the things have been touched on already in some of the cross-examination, but the three prongs are this. The ACL complaint is not timely or consistent with enforcement policy.
Okay. Could you speak a little louder so
we can hear? Is this better?
Yes, that's better.
I don't want to. Okay, the first point of our presentation will be that the ACL complaint is not timely or consistent with enforcement policy, and our attorneys will handle that part of the presentation. The complaint is not applied appropriately to regulatory standards or requirements. And thirdly, the complaint should consider actions by the CSD to comply with the regulations and to abate pollution. Here's the list of speakers and that we've already gone over. And this is a summary to our response. And this is where Mr. McLennan will begin.
Good afternoon, Mr. Chairman and members of the board. My name is John McLennan. I will be handling this with Mr. Seitz taking a bifurcated approach here, similar to those of you who are attorneys in a common tort situation. You typically bifurcate and you look at first liability. Is there culpability here, causation? And then secondly, only if you've established that, then you go to the issue of what is the damages? What is the liability? And I need to be louder. Okay, I'll pull it closer. I was going to use a horrific example from World War II to start off with. I don't think I need to do that. I just want to cut to the chase here and say that what I think I'd like us to all agree on at the get-go here is that we can, whatever our disagreements are, we can have consensus on it's wrong to punish the innocent, and it's wrong to punish them hugely. The culpability has to be demonstrated here. I think in the common law, the old saying was it's better for 10 guilty to go free than for one innocent to be punished. And certainly there's a proportionality issue in that as well. So I would urge you to please keep an open mind on part one of this and listen carefully to see if there is that requisite culpability in what has gone on here. In that regard, I'll start with the time schedule order from October 27, 2000. I think you've seen this before. In paragraph 13 of that order, it says, at the end of it, this is where it establishes the $10,000 per day penalty. It says, furthermore, because the board does not intend to punish or redress previous violations, This order provides that the board may extend the time for compliance for delays beyond the reasonable control of the CSD. Immediately after that was issued, a timely petition to the state board was filed in November. And one of the first reason for filing it was saying that the project delays alleged are beyond the reasonable control of the petitioner. I would like to point out that ever since the year 2000, this staff and this board has been commendably fair in not punishing the innocent. Granted, this CSD wanted from the get-go to contest the time schedule order. However, there appears to be, and again, I'm new at this. I've just been with the board 2 months today. But there was some sort of an agreement, a tacit agreement, that forward progress was being made, that the time schedule order would not be enforced. And for example, I think you've seen this before, in July 9th of 2004, where you do your quarterly updates at this board on seeing how was the CSD progressing, you looked at the fact that the time schedule order was long since overshot. But you said, Los Osos CSD has gone to great lengths to address each and every question and objection raised by project opponents. Los Osos CSD has rigorously and successfully responded to each appeal of discretionary approval and each court challenge. Project delays and noncompliance with the time schedule order are clearly beyond Los Osos CSD's ability to control. Assessment of penalties under Order 00-131 would result in bankrupting the CSD, and the responsibility for the community wastewater project would likely revert to San Luis Obispo County. Such action is not likely to result in resolution of water quality problems in Los Osos in a timely manner. Going on,
what was that document again?
That was your board's July 9th, 2004 staff agenda report.
So that was the staff report?
Yes.
To the board?
Yes.
Okay, thanks.
Yes. You also looked at the idea of what the CSD had been asking for quite some time, because we knew we were long since beyond the deadlines on the time schedule or the milestones. You looked at revising the time schedule order, and apparently this was turned down. But even in turning it down, you said, quote, current delays are caused by the fact that the Coastal Commission took over permitting authority for the project from San Luis Obispo County, and the permit approval time frame is unknown. So as of July 2004, you were still consistently on this path of saying, they're moving forward, there's no culpability, there's no liability. All that changed, apparently, on October 29th, when it became known that a draft ACO complaint was being prepared by, September 29th, when it became known that a draft ACO complaint was being prepared the morning after the election. You've seen that in our papers. In that, it doesn't mention the temporary suspension that was mentioned by Mr. Buell on October 1st. However, the worksheet does allude to the temporary suspension. Then, since that time, and this is one of the reasons why we've had a real difficulty in feeling like we're shooting at a moving target, we're not really sure, is it something that happened prior to October 6th, which triggered the time schedule order issuance, or is it something after that? Because we're talking a whole lot about what happened afterwards. Arguably, that maybe is the business of another time schedule order and ought to be something for continuance, but it's questionable what it is that happened after October 6th that creates
culpability. And we've seen a lot, and I think Mr. Seitz was pointing to this, and I'm glad for the questions we had just before we started here about on what basis are these directors speaking. And let me just clarify this. This board is operating as an adjudicatory body, like judges. And the California Supreme Court has said the doctrine, quote, this is County of Los Angeles versus Superior Court of Los Angeles County, 1975 Supreme Court case, quote, the doctrine which precludes judicial delving into the subjective mental processes of individual legislators is a corollary of the related legal principle which establishes that the validity of a legislative act does not depend on the subjective motivation of its draftsman, but rests instead on the objective effect of the legislative terms. The Supreme Court went on and said, the validity of legislation does not turn on legislative motive. The mental processes of individual legislators become irrelevant to the judicial task. Hence, we do not appear into these subjective subjective realms.
Could I just ask you, are we dealing with legislative acts of the CSD?
Well, that's the issue. What are the acts of the CSD? How have they acted? Under the code that governs them, and it's in my papers, I could find you the code section if you'd like, it says that a board only acts, one, when it has a quorum, and two, when that quorum approves something by motion, resolution, or ordinance. And so, according to what the courts have said, it doesn't matter what people said in the heat of campaign. It doesn't matter the statements that are made. What matters is what have they done? What actions have they taken? This is picked up again in a case called Enzen Bickford Realty Corporation versus City Council of the City of Livermore, a 1977 case.
Is that also dealing with legislative acts of that administrative agency or board?
Let me find the quote here.
Could you find the site while you're at it? I didn't
hear sure.
The title of the case because you called.
Yeah, it's 68 Calap 3rd, 467. It says, as often as not, members of administrative bodies make decisions for unarticulated reasons. Often the discussions at a public hearing are guided by the direction taken by members of the public who speak. These discussions may or may not include what is significant to a given member of the agency. There are a host of reasons why the utterances of councilmen at public hearings cannot be said to encompass the totality of their thought processes. It would be manifestly burdensome and unproductive to require that once a councilman started discussing the merits of a decision he was being called upon to make, he must set forth all of his opinions on the subject under discussion. Such an inhibiting factor would lead inevitably to silent council meetings. The members of the public would lose the benefit of open discussion of the public business. Conversely, public statements made by members of the City Council to the effect that their decision is based upon considerations of public health, safety, and welfare cannot make the decision valid if it is in fact arbitrary or unreasonable. The decision of the City Council must be found reasonable or unreasonable based upon its effect in light of the facts as they exist relevant to that decision. So what courts say is we don't go in we're not psychiatrists. We don't start trying to understand the psychology, the mentality of what goes on in the thought process or the political agendas or all of that. We're looking at what have they done. Here, what we have is we have, as you know, the temporary suspension, which barely 13 days later, I believe, tried to be lifted. The day after it was lifted, our news got out that we were talking about lifting it. I received a letter from the attorneys fighting the Measure B lawsuit saying, quote, because Measure B was successful, it is now law and fully applicable to community service district activities. In particular,
Measure B terminates construction contracts for a construction of a sewage treatment plant at the Tri-W site under their own terms. Please be advised that our clients, Case and Albero, are fully prepared to enforce Measure B if the district takes action contrary to its spirit and provisions. Accordingly, we ask that the district terminate the existing contracts and refrain from further construction activities related to the Tri-W site. Doing so will avoid yet another lawsuit requesting injunctive relief. So here is this district caught between Measure B, and nobody's denying that there was a lot of campaign statements that were made out there. But within 10 days after that October 3rd letter, they're trying to restart the project. They get this saying, you're going to get sued on that. They're caught between a rock and a hard spot. What happened?
Mr. McClendon, yeah. How could they restart the project? They weren't going to have funds from the State Water Board.
We didn't know that at that time.
It was cut off. I mean, did the district really think that they could adhere? Excuse me, Mr. Blesky. Did the district really think it could adhere to Measure B and not be in violation of the State Water Board loan? Is that what the district is going to do?
The district was wrestling with that. This was a new board. We had initially.
Now, whether it's a new board or not, there's attorneys advising the board.
Right.
On the contract.
Right.
And the agreement.
Right.
And so, I'm assuming that they're getting competent legal advice as to how to conduct themselves. And
right.
I understand you've told me Al Barrow's group is kind of threatening the district, that they're going to go after
right.
the district.
Mm-hmm.
Now, did it make any difference that the Regional Water Quality Control Board, a state agency, had a order in effect that was prescribing certain conduct? How did that play into this? I mean, I'm jumping the gun here a little bit, but your presentation is raising a lot of questions in my mind.
Okay.
You know, so you don't have to answer.
Oh, okay.
Okay.
All right.
Yeah, excuse me, Mr. Shallcross.
I think there's something that's confusing me. Maybe you can straighten me out. You keep referring to the CSD, and really what you're referring to is the CSD board, because the CSD is bigger than the board. The CSD can do, and as far as I can tell, as far as I know, the CSD can act in another way. The people of the CSD can enact an initiative. That initiative was Measure B. That was an action by the CSD. Now, these folks, sounds to me, clearly thought that they had to follow that, or at least were threatened into following it. But I think we have to look at the action of the people of the CSD in passing Measure B in the first place as a triggering act here.
Well, you can respond to that if you want.
I don't
want
need to. Okay. Well, that would be one way to look at it. I mean, you could punish the CSD for the sins of the voters, I suppose. The voters voted to adopt this thing. It was a narrow vote. The CSD is in a position where they're saying, okay, it's now part of our law, of our district. It's part of our code. Our code makes any violation of the code a misdemeanor. We have the case that came down in the same-sex marriage case, Lockyer versus State of California in 2000, where the Supreme Court made it very, very clear that elected officials do not have the discretion to simply assume that a voter initiative is invalid, that is strictly the purview of the courts, strictly the purview of the judiciary.
I understand that. I think you're missing my point. Let me ask you this. Could the CSD board have passed an initiative like Measure B saying, it's illegal to build on this site, or the other part of it, which is the people we'll have to vote on any future side. Could the board have done that on its own without the people voting that?
Well, that's the $64 question that was up before the court of appeal, I believe.
Well, what you're trying to argue is because the voters of the CSD voted this thing. This is what it sounds like to me. Correct me if I'm wrong. Then anything the board did based on that is okay. And I'm saying that's fine, but it was the people of the CSD who voted it in the first place that is the action that to me seems like a much more compelling argument that the time order has been violated. But, you know, whether the board went along with that or not, as it was up to them, they felt they had to. I can understand that if that was the law, but just because the people pass a law that violates an order doesn't make them the innocent voters.
May I interrupt for just a minute? We have a presentation that's going to be covering all these points if we could only get to
good.
Them. I'd really like to keep moving.
Okay.
I'm going to be my timekeeper for my group because we don't want to lose
Ms. Schicker,
our time.
I stopped your clock, so don't worry.
Okay.
I want my meeting into your time.
And, you know, we're allowed to ask questions, okay?
No, I know that. I'm trying. We just have all this great information to share with you, and we're just waiting to get to it.
Okay.
All right, I'm going to resume the clock.
Let me just go to the two actions that you can show. No question about it. These are the two resolutions. You have them in your packet. This is what the board has officially taken a position on. And the board took a position saying, we want this sewer built. We want to do it. The state board has said, as long as Measure B is out there, you can't build it at Tri-W. That's the state board holding that position, the presumption of its validity unless it's proven invalid. We've said that we will build, that we want the contract, the SRF loan contract, we want to build there. What we didn't get the second time, we'll get into this in a bit, is and there was an impossibility of performance in one of the points that was given on the second version of the state's offer. I'll turn to the slides here now because I'm running late, I know. Okay, this is what goes into your own requirements, goes into assessing fines. The liability, economic benefit, beneficial use, a base amount, adjustment for conduct, other factors, staff costs, ability to pay, checks against statutory limits. Next slide. Okay, what goes into assessing fines? What are the standards? Number of reportable raw sewage spills, number of beach closures, number of monetary fines and average amounts, number of TSO and number of violations resulting in monetary fines, average fine for TSO violation, average length of a TSO issued, and these are things the board needs to know to assure consistency and effective enforcement. Do we have another slide then? This is from your staff report. A complaint would be issued based on discharges in violation of the TSO 00131, the waste discharge order, and cease and desist orders. The difference between a separate ACL order and the TSO is that separate ACL orders provide somewhat more flexibility in the amounts of the penalties. That's from your 704 report. Okay, here the points are CSD has never created any delays to the project. We argue that the temporary timeout was in a contract approved by the state and I believe it had the regional board oversight on it. They had seen a copy that we had been excused from all previous impediments is beyond our control. If the previous delays were excused as beyond the control of the CSD, how are they now resurrected and fines assessed retroactively?
delays since October 1 are beyond the control of the CSD, and we never said, as I said earlier, no to the SRF loan. They said no when they added a condition which was completely impossible to perform.
Excuse me.
I got a question. That last slide.
Sure.
Can you put it back up?
Yeah. Sure.
I know you might think this is a fine point, and I'm beating a dead horse, but I think this dead horse is going to come around a couple more times before this hearing's over. Point number one, the CSD never created any delays to the project. Are you talking about the CSD board or the people of the CSD?
There's no question that the adoption of Measure B has thrown a major wrench in this project.
I'm just asking if you're talking about the board there, or if you're talking about the people.
I'm talking about the CSD board and what they have taken.
And I'd really appreciate it if you'd make that clear, because the board didn't, you know, when the people vote, that's not an action of the board. When the board does something, that's an action of the board, and there's a difference.
Correct.
Even though both of them can be legally binding.
Correct.
Okay, thanks.
Thank you. Thank you for the clarification. Okay. In your, again, from your September, your July 04 staff report, it says noncompliance was clearly beyond the control of the CSD's ability. And this is what I read earlier, that we would penalties would result in bankruptcy. It would not result in the resolution of the water quality problems we have. Before I turn it over to, how much time do I have? Am I running late? I'm running late. Okay. Maybe I'll save this for closing. What I'd like to do is have John Seitz, who's been at the helm of the CSD as district council, I think, since its birth, and he will cover the second half, the issue of liability.
I'm not going to use it. That must mean I'm dead. If I'm, first of all, can we see Lori? If my slides will pop up on the, I think we've already kind of shown Matt that we can get them up.
Yeah, you want them now? Or?
Yeah, just if you just have the index up there, it'd be great. Okay, you're going to have to slide them over to where we start with number one. Okay. Thank you. Yeah, that works great. The purpose of my testimony here today is to provide evidence to this board as to why fines will not achieve water quality. Before I start, I want to start with where there is agreement. Now, the board chair issued a number of questions to the respective parties, and both sides answered them. And through my interpretation, this is where we found, I think, absolute agreement in response to those questions. First, the SRF funds are not available to pay the fines. We know that. I think both sides agree to that. Second, the Los Osos Community Service District Board cannot unilaterally impose assessments to pay fines. I think there's absolute agreement between both the prosecution team and our team that that's the case. The second one is are members of the assessment district ultimately responsible for payment of fines? This has been the key, and I know I've been burning a lot of time, on why I'm trying to figure out, is it the fire district that is going to pay fines? Is it the water department that's going to pay fines? Is it the drainage department that's going to pay these fines? And I think this will become clearer. Because it says, are members of the assessment district ultimately responsible for payment of fines? The assessment district is the prohibition zone, I mean, in the question. And the answer to that is, how can they be responsible when you think about this, that the assessment district is made up of both developed properties and undeveloped properties? And that is to say that the undeveloped properties are not violating 8313. They are not discharging to the groundwater table. It's an impossibility. So we'll start off with when this all began in 1998, and this is before my time, and I suppose we can't blow these up, but this is K98. And I gave you all my exhibits, and I tabbed them. This is exhibit number one if you want to follow along. And basically what it says when you go down there is that the district assumes all of the obligations of the county within CSA, I think, 9, and I'm going to get to that, what's there, and also accepted some responsibility to try and comply with Regional Water Quality Control Board, 8313, when, again, State Water Resources Control Board, 8413. If I can, and this is what the community enacted. And the community, I don't know who drafted this. I can tell you I probably would think I'd do it a little bit different, but that's what ended up on the ballot for our residents to vote on. And they approved it overwhelmingly. If we can go to the next slide. Okay, I'm sorry, go to 3.
Mr. Seitz, this was a different vote.
This is when we formed the district in
1990. Yeah, and so here you have property owners.
You have property owners.
That even didn't live in the district.
No, actually, that is a registered voter vote, much the same way we elect our board. It wasn't a property owner vote. And hopefully, if you have questions about Prop 218, I think I'm somewhat, maybe like 70% of an expert on Prop 218. I could answer your questions. But this is what we ended up with. And this shows you the various zones of benefit that were operated by the county. Now, if you take a look at that dark area that sort of consumes it all, that is Zone B. And that's the old fire district operated by the county. That is the only service that was provided by the district at its formation that was provided district-wide. It was the only service that all of the residents enjoyed from the actions of the board, is that area that is shaded. Now, it includes, the survey is clear, it includes all of the other A, Bs, and Cs, but it's only those areas, and each of those areas that is marked out were separate zones of benefit with specific functions and separate and specific financing. Or modes of gaining. And so when you take a look at, and I hope I have this this right, if you take a look at that chart, and I know I got so many papers up here, I hope, and Bruce can hopefully explain this, I think Zone E, which is what you can see right there, it says drainage, street lighting, septic tank maintenance. I think that's Vista del Oro. That's what was in your, it's just that little zone right there. It's just E. And it works on a separate budget. It's not a district-wide budget. It's a budget for E. If you go to F down there, I think that's what? Bay Ridge. Thank you. That's Bay Ridge. And if you take a look over on the thing there, the district operates drainage, street lighting, septic tank maintenance, open space maintenance. It's that area that is the only area that those two areas are the only things that we provide area-wide sewer service to, and that is operating septic tanks for these subdivisions that were approved by the Regional Water Quality Control Board at some point in time. I assume that you were around then. Maybe I could be a little bit wrong there. But by some regulatory agency other than the district. Now, if you go there, you see Zone A up there. That's the district's water department. It's not district-wide. And as you'll see in a minute, it's a real configuration. G is drainage. And you can see we have two drainage responsibilities in there. Subsequent to us forming this district and having these little areas of operation that have their own independent budgets, we did petition LAFCO and we took over solid waste, as I think I said in my pleadings. So when you take a look at how a special district operates, especially this one, the only things that we provide on a district-wide basis to all of our residents is fire and solid waste collection. If I can see the next slide.
Mr. Seitz?
Yeah.
I'm going to stop the clock because I...
Yeah.
Mr. Shawcross has
now,
a question.
What you're talking about now, it goes only to the alternative of the basin plan violation. Is that right? The claims on the basin plan.
Right. Well, I'm going to show you the basin plan up here.
No.
I'm sorry.
The prosecution is arguing in the alternative. One is the time schedule order violation.
Right.
One is the basin plan violation. And so what you're talking about here is relevant to that.
Right. And right? Just so I'm not, nobody is misguided here, we believe the alternative is defective on its face. When we talk about the alternative, whether or not we're talking about the time schedule order in the alternative, there's no worksheet data on the alternative. The worksheet is based solely on the TSO violation and not the individual things. So I just want to show you how this all kind of melds together and why I believe that the remedy that your staff is asking you to implement will not move us any closer to water quality issues on the basin plan. So if I could see the next slide.
Could I ask a question,
sure.
Mr. Seitz? Did my questions that I had posed to both sides, did it trigger this?
No.
Response? Okay.
No. I was making this response
independently.
Independently. Okay. It just sort of fit really nicely into it.
Okay. Because I just want to share with you what my thought process was with
sure.
that. Okay. I just wanted to know what would be the practical effect of if there's a fine that's assessed and what happens. What
right.
Who's
right.
responsible for it? Is it the individuals? Is it the district itself? I wasn't thinking beyond that.
Well,
like the complexities of the CSD,
no,
and you've got
no.
fire and water and
no,
solid waste. I didn't even
no.
consider that.
I put this together. I was tasked with the job, so to speak, of explaining to the board, your board, how a district operates. Because when I first saw that administrative complaint, the one thing that jumped out at me, clear as day, that it was meant to address a corporate agency like a city or a county that gets bed taxes, gets sales taxes, has what we typically call in the business a general fund that oversees all of the operations of a city, and generally speaking, and this is just my guess, that when you fine a city, you are actually getting paid through a general fund. You're not getting paid, they're not taking the fire department money and saying, here's the fire department money. They're looking at the finances of a corporate agency as opposed to a special district. And that's what I want to present to you, and so that you have an understanding of how this all fits together. If you take a look up on this next slide, this is a picture of the district. And if you go out on the outside, that's the entire district. If you take a look at the white stuff in the inside in that line, that's the prohibition zone. The outside of the district is, or the orange is the wastewater management zone, but it is not within the prohibition zone. So the prohibition zone isn't district-wide. The prohibition zone is a subzone of the district. So when you say, tax the residents or tax the ratepayers. Well, two things I want to bring to your attention. One is, of course, the people in the orange aren't violating the prohibition zone because they're not in the prohibition zone. Secondly, when you take a look at the prohibition zone itself, there are folks in the prohibition zone that have undeveloped property. And they are not violating the prohibition zone. Thirdly, which even makes this more complicated, is that you have property owners within the prohibition zone that are living there, and then you have renters in there. And your action, from a lawyer's perspective, would say it's in rem, because it's the property owners that are violating the prohibition, not necessarily the anybody else. And, of course, those folks that are not operating septic tanks aren't violating the prohibition. The next slide. Okay, this is my favorite one. And the reason why is this thing actually overlies the prohibition zone. And if you take a look at the purple, that's the zone A I showed you on the first map. That's the Los Osos Community Service District Water Department. The orange is the Cal Cities Water Department, which is a completely independent PUC-operated water district that operates within the prohibition zone. If you take a look at the, it's off to the left there, sort of, I don't know, reddish color, that's S&T, a mutual water company that provides water within the prohibition zone. So you don't have what you typically think about a public agency or corporate agency where you have a city that's providing water to everybody in the city, sewer to everybody in the city, police department to everybody in the city, land use to everybody in the city, and all that stuff. These districts operate on completely different principles. And not only that, as I've pointed out to you in my papers, they're enterprise funds. There's no big you can't take your water department money and say, oh, I'm just going to transfer these over to the sewer department. You have to operate under the law, under Prop 13, and I quoted you the code sections. You have to operate each of these departments, each of those zones, as independent zones and independent operations. That's why I disagree with the prosecution's team, is that you can't consider these as businesses. It's exactly what they are. We derive our income from these little zones that we operate, and then we, in turn, manage those zones. So when they say the business model doesn't apply, it applies in spades to this special district and how it operates. So I wanted to bring that to your attention. Now if we can go to the next slide. And what I want to do here is there's a reserve. Yes, this is it. If you can, yeah. This is... what this shows you right here is how we allocate property taxes to our special zones. You know, we do, as I think you can see up there, and Mr. Buell maybe can help me with this, because I'm...
Would you like him to come to the witness stand, Mr. Buell?
Okay. Bruce, from what was our property tax intake for last year?
Around $1.4 million.
Okay. And where does that property tax money go?
Well, the board has historically apportioned that amongst the funds, and the percentages are up there on that sheet. This is derived historically from the share of the property tax that went to Fund 200, and that's the Bay Ridge Estates area. Fund 300 is our fire fund, and Fund 700 is Vista de Oro. So what the board historically has done is to take the dollars that were available from property tax and distribute it on that formula. The one exception is the last column labeled 800. That is drainage. Excuse me. And the board annually has allocated a flat amount of $25,000 to the drainage fund to assist in paying for those costs.
And the drainage projects that we operate are related, because it's the ponding water that we drain. Is that not correct?
That is correct. We operate four pumps in specific geographic areas. We're shown on your screen in about 5 minutes.
And that ponding water occurs in the prohibition zone, does it not?
Yes. All four of the pumps service areas that are in the prohibition zone.
Okay. And so the reality is if we stopped funding the drainage, we would not be draining the very surfacing water that everybody's been complaining about. Is that not correct?
That is correct.
Okay.
Mr. Chair.
And
before you go on.
Yeah.
I'd like to ask Mr. Buell, because he alluded that the board appropriates the funds from the property tax. You kind of led me to believe that this was done by statute, some government statute. But what Mr. Buell is testifying, if I'm not correct, that the board allocates this either on an annual basis or a periodic basis or when they do their budget or whatever. Is that not true?
It's part true, and let me just see if I can clarify it for you. The district, you'd have to really understand pre-Prop 13 and how this all worked.
The district gets... I understand it very clearly.
Oh, okay, very good.
Being a mayor of a city that was on both, okay?
Okay, good.
And I also chair a special district, so I understand districts.
Okay, good. This district receives, when we took over from the county, we received the property tax allocation that the county had to our particular district. Okay, and what we are showing you here is, yes, we did receive property taxes. And the property taxes that we receive, I wanted to show you, because I thought there'd be some concern here, where the property taxes go. And they go towards fire protection from the Zone B that I showed you on the big map. And that's historic from the county, I believe, Bruce, is it not?
No, sir.
Okay.
There was a different allocation that the county had.
What was that? Do you remember that allocation?
Yes. Well, of the available funds, the water department got about 20%, and that's not up here because the district board in 2001 determined that the property taxes shouldn't subsidize water service to a small area of the community.
So it was transferred over to the fire department?
That is correct. 100% of the property taxes previously dispersed to the water fund were transferred to the fire fund.
Okay. And how much revenue do we receive from the residents within the prohibition zone to provide sewer service there?
Zero currently, John.
And that's because we don't operate a...
That's correct. No, as you know, we have an assessment. There's 5,226 properties in the prohibition zone, and they pay an assessment of about $225 a year, but that's totally dedicated to the debt service on the bond that was issued in 2002.
That's what you'd consider to be a restricted fund?
Yes, sir. That is a restricted fund.
Thank you. Okay. So if we can go on to the next slide, please. We can go on to the next one. I'm sorry. That one I'm not going to bother with. The next one, there's a recap that I want to see if we can get to.
Mr. Seitz, yeah. Michael Thomas had a question.
Sure. I have a question. It's not related to what you were just talking about with Mr. Buell, but it has to do with the complexity that you were describing.
Yes.
Of the CSD. You said that the CSD is committed to building a wastewater treatment facility.
First of all, let me just point out something. I'm stumbling here for a little bit because I really don't know how to answer that question. You have to understand, the same time that Mr. Buell was put on administrative leave, for lack of a better word, I joined him. And so I have not attended board meetings I've not been there.
Someone else could answer.
Yeah,
that question.
But I just feel, you know, we have in our pleadings that they are, but I don't. I can't sit down.
That's testimony, and that's fine.
Right.
So the CSD is committed to building a wastewater treatment facility. The CSD has testified to that before the board.
Right. Okay.
So let's say that the CSD does build a wastewater treatment facility. And at some point in the future, when it's built and it's operating, there's a major spill.
Okay.
And the regional board staff responds to that by issuing a complaint and recommending a fine to the board.
Can we go back to the slide where I showed the prohibition zone? Next one over, I think. There you go. Okay. There we go. There we go. It's a long answer, but I think you want
to. I haven't asked the question yet.
Oh, I thought you said if there was a spill and you
asked. If there's a spill.
Okay.
And the board staff recommends a fine, a major fine, to the board. What would your argument be? Would it be we are not responsible because the CSD is a complex system?
No, not at all. Because at that point in time, you make one assumption, and that is that there is a wastewater treatment plant sewering the prohibition zone. That generates revenue. On you know, just like you pay for your sewer charges at home, you get income in, and you have reserves, especially under the SRF agreement. There's a pretty severe reserve.
Why would you not? But what I understand, there's funds available then, so you would be able to.
For sure. But
where does the complexity argument go?
The complexity is today is we don't have a wastewater treatment project to leverage fines because there's no ongoing operation. The only income we receive is from those operations that I listed up there, which is the fire department, the water department. And what are you saying? You're saying that the people in the water department should pay because for all the folks in the prohibition zone? That are because they can't get a sewer, or are you saying the people in the fire department should pay a fine because the people in the sewer are violating 8313?
It's a question of where you get the funds from.
Yeah, exactly, and what you're hurting. I mean, I don't think there's any intention on this board to bankrupt the fire department. I don't think there's any intentions on this board to bankrupt the water department. And that's the complexity of the issues when you take a look at a special district, everybody automatically thinks city, general fund, these revenues pouring in, discretionary spending, and believe me, they don't have a lot of it, so I'm not people, especially the mayor over there, is going to know that.
You've answered my question.
Okay. So
Mr. Sykes,
I had a fund balance sheet.
My question then becomes to this. Essentially, what you're arguing is that this board really has no remedy to enforce the time schedule order for violations at this point in time.
I think that if you
I mean, how
ask me that question, I can answer that question for you. But am I saying that you don't have remedies? The answer is no. What I'm telling you is the remedies that staff has presented to you today don't work.
Okay, you're going to one of the mitigation factors. It's really ability to pay.
The ability to pay, but not only that, is I think what you have to take a look at is where is this money coming from and what kind of havoc are you going to cause if you leverage an $11 million fine on this district. There isn't, between all of those funds, $11 million in reserve. And to the extent that you are saying, well, take the money out of reserves. You know, you're going to see in a minute here, there's $29,000 in one account, $39,000 in another account. Those reserves are for catastrophes. A fire engine breaks. Where do you go? You go to that department's reserves, and you don't have it. So
okay.
I'm hoping I can get to the if we can find the summary of reserves.
Well, you know what, Mr. Seitz?
Yeah.
I think your point is understood about the complexity issue. I don't know that you need to spend too much more time on that. I think that's pretty clear, and I think we're aware that because the plant has not been built, there's difficulty with getting any more money out of the ratepayers at this point.
Okay, and then I want to go to the next issue I was asked to talk on, and I'm just very briefly, is time schedule order 00131. There is this, I don't know if it's a rumor, a myth, or an analysis, but everybody thinks that 00131 and that time schedule order was an order that was agreed to by the district. And that was our timeline, and we gave it to the board, and the board happily stamped it. What I want to tell you is I sat at meetings with Mark Gazzuzzi at open public meetings where he came to the board over a period of time and said, this is what they're asking, we can't meet it. This is what we're asking, we can't meet it. Maybe we're at a point where we ought to compromise and come up with it. It was, as any other time schedule order, it was a negotiated time schedule order, the time schedules that were in there. It was not a something said the district handed to the regional board and they approved it. I was not, though, I'm going to testify this, I was not intimately involved in those negotiations. But as a witness at public meetings, I can tell you that's what I saw. Secondly, it's further, why would we have filed a petition to hold it in abeyance if we were so hunky-dory with it and everything that's in there? So sort of keep in mind, to the extent that you've been led to a thing that this is our time frame, we agreed to it, and that's just the way it is, that is not really how it happened from a practical perspective. And now it's Lori's turn to cross-examine me, so.
Hold on 1 second. Okay. You're down to 47 minutes, so you've just gone.
It was okay, but is there going to be cross or
oh,
not?
Oh yeah, yeah. Okay. You got plenty of time, but I've got to now switch the clock because they're going to be eating up their clock, asking you questions.